Again, my name is Christy Luce. I work with the Florida Department of Health in Tallahassee, Florida, and I am the Surveillance Systems Administrator. And today I just wanted to quickly share with you Florida's journey through electronic laboratory reporting, where we started off and then where we have come to today. On a side note, I want to mention to you that the system that we use in Florida is called Merlin. It doesn't stand for anything. It's just Merlin. It was named a long time before I got there. It was built over 10 years ago, and it is used for the reporting, management, and epidemiological analysis of communicable disease information, and it is used by all 67 of our county health departments. So where we started, as early as 2004, Florida leaders saw the need to get electronic data related to laboratory results. We began receiving electronic data from our Florida State Public Health Labs. This was essentially a flat file that we uploaded into Merlin. It was a long time before I got there again. But if you fast forward 2 years, we had started working with LabCorp back in 2004. And at the end of that 2 years, we had only managed to achieve production for four test codes. And so obviously that took a long time to get started. Also, in November of 2006, we changed our Florida Administrative Code to require laboratories to submit their electronic or their laboratory results electronically. Sorry about that. The actual Florida Administrative Code is Chapter 64D-3, and it required, use of Health Level 7. Let me back up. There we go. It required use of HL7. It requires some very basic patient demographic information and some very basic laboratory information as well. Now, Florida was not ready to start receiving electronic results at this time. Technically, we weren't ready, and there was no staff. It was sort of an unfunded mandate that we imposed upon ourselves. And so the laboratories were also at a loss. They weren't sure how to comply. Basically, what they were given was a list of reportable diseases and the standards related to HL7 version 2.3.1. So in January 2007, our state public health labs began implementation of a new laboratory information system, and that the vendor that they chose is LabWare. They are still the vendor. And that particular installation used LOINC codes, and we were not familiar with LOINC codes. And so when they started using LOINC codes, we actually had to redo our processes because we weren't ready for LOINC codes. We had always used essentially a flat file from the state public health labs. And so we also went in halvesies with the state public health lab and hired a project manager. That presented its own challenges because this project manager was actually representing both EPI and the laboratory. And so that we had to straighten out in short order. So in 2007, we actually began filtering results because we were getting results that we didn't necessarily need. It's essentially we scan incoming feeds from laboratories. We mark the ones that we want, and we export them to a smaller database, the Merlin database. And I'll also mention that all the different program areas query this larger database for data that is of interest to them. In Florida, it may be the same in your state, we have different program areas for different diseases. We have a Bureau of Sexually Transmitted Diseases, we have the Bureau of HIV/AIDS, the Bureau of Tuberculosis and Refugee Health, and then we have everything else, which ends up in the Bureau of Epidemiology. So how we went about this was we started to build a team. And we did use public health emergency preparedness money to do this. We hired a software tester to validate the data being sent to Merlin from LabWare. And then in May of 2007, we hired a Merlin project manager, and that person would concentrate specifically on ELR with no ties to the lab. And this project manager began work on the ELR implementation guide, which mandated the use of LOINC codes to laboratories wanting to comply with our Florida Administrative Code. So this was a little bit after I came to be the leader of the surveillance section, as small as it was. My colleague Janet Hamilton, who I saw walk in a few minutes ago, my team and her team work hand in hand. She's in charge of the surveillance systems team. And we initiated mandatory weekly meetings for the entire ELR team. By August of 2007, we were receiving results for 31 of the state public health LabWare tests. Later that year, we funded a full-time integration broker specialist that was devoted to ELR, and this was one of two of, I would consider, our most important hirings of contractors. This person was devoted to ELR, and so we didn't have to compete with other program areas for the integration of new labs. Then in 2008, the LabWare implementation was essentially done. We were getting 83 laboratory tests from them, and we shifted our focus to bringing on some of the larger commercial labs that had the high report volume. So then we hired more contractors. We hired a business analyst, and I would say that that is the second of the two most important contract people that we hired. The analyst that we were able to get had extensive experience with a healthcare information technology company, and so he really understood what we were trying to do. Also, that same year, I took over the position of ELR liaison, and essentially that position was created to try and work out some of the differences that the labs had with their feed and what we could take. And so it was really almost a referee. What can you do? What can we do? How can we try and figure this out so that we can get that data coming in? And then also we hired an ELR software tester, and this tester was devoted to nothing but testing the ELR feeds as they came in. Again, our business analyst, as I said, is probably one of the most important contract positions that we have working on ELR. He coordinates with the laboratories. He obtains a list of tests for each lab. He works with the IB specialists to establish the secure data transfer feed. He coordinates the testing between the software tester who tests the message format and the epidemiologist who do the content validation testing. And he determines when we would move a lab into production, when they're really ready to go. And then he also scans our database to make sure that a laboratory hasn't added a test that they didn't tell us about. And so we can pick those up fairly quickly. So by December of 2008, we were receiving results for 82 LabCorp tests. We also overhauled the ELR implementation guide, and it now contains Florida-specific guidelines, especially for the placement of the data inside the HL7 message. Within the 231 framework, there's a lot of room for judgment calls of where certain data needs to go. We put out some really specific guidelines as to where we wanted the data to go. So by March of 2009, we were working with most of the major hospital and commercial laboratories in Florida. They include LabCorp, Florida Hospital, All Children's Hospital, Mayo Medical Laboratories, IRL, and Quest. In that particular Quest, we have several different Quest laboratories, and this one was the one that's located in Miramar, Florida. So then right in the middle of all of our great progress, H1N1 hit. We stopped all regular development. We made H1N1 flu a reportable disease in Florida. We are allowed to do that via our Florida Administrative Code that says that we can, in the case of a public health emergency, make specific diseases reportable. We added the flu test. Our state public health lab was doing H1N1 tests, LabCorp, and then eventually Quest. We added them to our feed. We did the work necessary to start receiving those tests. And we also, within Merlin, created what we called a flu task list. And essentially when the flu tests came in, they were parsed based on the patient's county of residence. And so we put those results on that county's task list. And so they knew when they came in the morning, they opened up Merlin, they knew that they had to follow up on certain H1N1 positive results. And this graph shows the effect of H1N1 on our development. You can see that we added a few tests in September of 2009, but it was really a lull because we had to concentrate our energies on the H1N1 response. And then finally, in January of 2010, we were able to get back to business. And these are the hospitals and or the facilities that we were working with and the number of tests that they had in production at that time. So in January of 2011, we added a dedicated environment for ELR. And what this did was it set a platform for the testing of ELR so that it was not affected by other development. We could make sure that what we were about to put into production was the latest, best tested information that we could possibly get. And then also of note, in June of 2010, we stopped requiring the use of LOINC codes. We allowed laboratories to use local codes, and we used our integration broker specialist to map those codes to the LOINC codes. So our current state, we're currently receiving over 11,000 results per day. Those represent about 60% of the total reportable disease laboratory result volume in Florida. We've targeted those larger facilities, either commercial or hospital facilities, that do the largest volume of reportable diseases. The other 40% is made up of two or three other larger facilities that we have yet to target, and then a lot of smaller, low-volume laboratories that either aren't financially ready, aren't technologically ready to start sending data electronically. I'll also note that when the Florida Administrative Code was changed in 2006, within that rule, we did not put a compliance date. It essentially said when the rule was made effective that laboratories had to comply. And so by not putting that compliance date on there, it almost left things open. And like I said, we were not ready to start receiving that much data. So one of the things that we're doing today is we have established a partnership with New York State, and we are exchanging electronic laboratory reporting data with New York. We have a lot of snowbirds that spend half their time in New York, and then they claim Florida residency because we don't pay state income tax. it's just a fact. And so a lot of times we have a lot of shared laboratory results. They'll go up there to get tested during the summer months, and so New York has to used to have to fax them to us, and now we have an electronic data feed that exchanges that. And my colleague Kate Gooden is going to give a presentation on that partnership on Wednesday at I think 8:40 is what it is. And this graph, as it is to see, shows the total filters in production since April of 2005. And so that shows where we've come in a few short years. We have 27 providers representing multiple facilities sending production data. They send almost 2,000 production test codes all the time, and we have about 15 providers or facilities in the testing phase. Then in July of 2011, we hired a meaningful use liaison, mostly to coordinate the change from HL7 version 2.3.1 to what's required in the meaningful use rule for reportable lab results, and that's HL7 version 2.5.1. So all of these facilities that we have in production all of a sudden had to change their HL7 feed. We had to do a lot of changing to be able to accept that 2.5.1 feed, and so this meaningful use liaison really puts laboratories into the queue as far as us. We essentially have to retest their entire feed. So he's been working on that. He also maintains a list of hospitals that have received attestation for not only reportable lab results, but syndromic surveillance as well. So our keys to success, one of those was hiring the right people in the right positions. We've amassed an excellent team. They're excited about what they do, and they do really good work. Of those, we have business analysts, developers, code writers, an integration broker specialist, software testers, and a project manager. And we also got upper management support of this project. It was tasked to me from my boss that this was going to be the year back in about 2006 that we would actually bring LabCorp into production because we had been playing with LabCorp for years and years and years. And so it was definitely an upper management support decision to move forward with ELR. And then I'll also say my supervisor, Richard Hopkins, does an excellent job of marketing our successes with ELR to other upper management within the Department of Health. Also, we've tried very hard to foster an environment that encourages teamwork and innovation. We have essentially a zero turnover rate in on our team, and I supervise three full-time employees and anywhere from 12 to 15 contract employees at one time. And all those contract employees, from the time that they were hired, have stayed on with the Department of Health. And probably the most important thing was us allowing for flexibility. We were very stringent with our requirements when we first got started. We required the use of LOINC codes. Since then, we have backed off on that. It's definitely a balance of what to allow in versus the staff time needed to accommodate those exceptions to what we consider our standards. And that's it for my presentation. I would be happy to answer any questions now. Was it just that informative? Yes, ma'am.
You said that you're accepting live data feeds from several laboratories. Are you relying on them to determine which one of those results is a reportable disease, or do you take everything from them and then you sort it out on your agency side?
Sure. Question was, do we accept everything from laboratories, or do we expect them to know what's on our reportable disease list? And the answer is we do both. We can filter out. We can accept everything. We don't want to. We had a big legal issue with that because, you know, are we now the custodians of this data that we really didn't want? We prefer not to do it that way. The way that we prefer to do it is when a laboratory requests, when they start talking to us about, hey, we want to start sending ELR and things like that, we actually get a list from them of all the tests that they perform, and we mark the ones that we need sent to us. And that's the job of a young lady that actually just walked in the door, Kate Gooden. Hello, Kate. Kate will go through, she's an epidemiologist, and she will go through and mark the ones that we expect them to send.
Okay, just as a follow-up mm-hmm. to that, is that just for the test themselves or the test plus results?
We filter by tests. Yes, we filter by tests. Yes, ma'am?
So are you receiving, for results, are you receiving those positives as well as negatives?
No, when we mark the Sure, I'm sorry. The question was, do we receive both positives and negatives? 90% no, we only receive positives. We have our filters that go in it, and it's essentially an SQL query. And we tell the laboratories, don't send us negatives. And usually they can work that into their LIMS system, and it's not a problem. If they should, we have we build filters that go, they go look at the data, and they will filter it based on the result code. The, I believe it's OBX within the HL7. We did, for a while, during H1N1, ask laboratories to send both positive and negative flu results. But that was not required. We asked them to do it, and some were able to do that. Our rule only requires positive results. Yes, sir?
How many laboratories do
you currently support? The number of laboratory streams that we currently support is right at 27 right now. That's 27 streams, but it represents facilities that have multiple facilities. So Florida Hospital, for example, has, I think, 11 facilities that it gathers data for and sends to us. From a brokering standpoint, only 27. We have looked at, the question was, have we been able to look at essentially quality reports that have, and whether they show an improvement in report time, investigation time, and other things like that. We have. One that we did a few years ago, I will tell you, focused on, Janet, help me, hepatitis A, and I think botulism. We picked out three diseases and did an analysis on that. And frankly, it was a little underwhelming. That was several years ago. We have not done one within the last couple of years. I'm sorry. Tell me, Janet.
Sorry. I was just going to say, we do have someone take this appointment on Wednesday about specifically those issues. And I think ultimately what we have found is that timeliness for very high priority diseases,
the enterics, the salmonellas, the E. coli.
And certainly we do have varying data quality overall on those systems.
Right, and it varies from lab to lab, unfortunately. Yes, ma'am?
What percentage of your ER is coming from large labs versus coming from hospitals?
Oh, the question was the percentage of lab results coming from commercial labs versus hospitals. I would probably say it's about 50-50. LabCorp does a ton of results in Florida, but we've also targeted the major hospitals as well. So I would say it's essentially balanced out at this point. Yes?
One meaningful use certification requirement was reporting using loin cords for tests. And how it affects your life right now because you instead move to local.
Right. I would definitely say we weren't prepared for the meaningful use rule that required use of 2.5.1 HL7 and the use of LOINC codes. It's actually okay with us. It's similar to having to retest for the 2.5.1 feed. I will tell you that the bulk of providers in Florida have chosen not to meet stage one requirements for reportable lab results. I would say the vast majority are meeting stage one through the vaccine registry. And so for the people that we've already been working with, we haven't had any laboratories that weren't using LOINC codes that have started meaningful use. We've attested to about 8 hospitals for both reportable lab results and syndromic surveillance. Any other questions? Okay. Well, thank you very much.